I still remember one of the inaugural moments of coming into college that showed that college was so different. Well, there's two, and coincidentally, they were both the same professor. This professor, like, it was a sculpture professor. And we had to, you know, make all these sculptures and put them on this tabletop, and he would just walk down the lane, you know, right next to each piece and, okay, I'm going to critique this piece, then take a step forward, critique the next piece, and just go on. And I remember one kid, man, he got to that kid's art, and whatever it was, he obviously missed the target. And not just missed the target, the teacher got fed up. Like, this is not even close. Grabbed the kid's sculpture, just like scooped his hand around the backside of it, and then just proceeded to pull his hand forward until the sculpture fell off the table onto the ground. It shatters, and at which point the teacher kicks the remains under the desk. And then, without missing a beat, takes one step further forward and then starts critiquing the next kid's art. Wow. Didn't even say a thing about this one. Just looked at it, looked at the student, shook his head, scooped it, shatter, and then underneath the table. It's like, hoo-hoo, boy, that's not a good thing. So that's when I knew, yeah, the college was not going to be the safe haven that high school was. Like, oh, we're always here for your greater good. You know, it's like, nope, college was not that way.
No trophies here.
Yeah, but this was also this is also the same professor who invited us to an art gallery, and we're like, oh crap, man, yeah, to an open house at an art gallery, crap, I've never been to one of these before. And you're thinking like, wow, we've hit the height of art society, this is going to be great. So you go into this place, and they ask your name, and it's like, yep, you're on the list. Come on in. And so it's at this like swanky home that they converted like the front rooms into this gallery where they had like all this different artwork and so forth. And there was like some things where still to this day can't really put my mind wrapping around what it is that I saw. But there was stuff just like, we got people standing around in this corner. That's art. And then as you walked in, they also had like, do you want to participate in this? And it's like, what the heck am I talking about? I have no idea what's going on. So I didn't realize how much performance art was going on, you know, as opposed to just like, I was thinking like, oh, look at this painting on the wall. You know, I was like, nope. And then all of a sudden I heard a chime, like a ping, ping. And it was like, it drew everybody's attention to the center entrance of this home that had a curving staircase. And as the chimes continued, everybody kind of was a hush. People made their way towards the entranceway. And I was like, I guess that's where everybody's going. Here we go. And here comes my professor out of the top landing of this staircase and starts to descend. He had strategically placed candles like on his shoulders, and then he had his arms outstretched and had placed candles upright on his hands and on his elbows. And he was also absolutely stark raving naked. And he's descending the stairs, lit up only by candles. And I'm like going, hey, that's my professor. Hey, oh, that's my professor. Yeah, he's definitely, he's fully engaged in this art. You know, it's like, you know, so that's where I got my strength to at least play Indiana Jones as performance arts, as close as I'll ever get to that. But whew, to this day, I'm like going, there was no warning, no like, hey, just wanted to give you guys a heads up that my art is probably not what you think. Yeah, exactly. It's like, mercifully, he didn't have a candle there, but it was like, oh boy.
I wondered where that story was going. I'm going, please don't say he was naked. Please don't say he was naked.
Sure enough. Yeah. So,
that's going,
yes,
right to the beginning of the podcast.
You're listening to And This Is Why I Love Comics.
Andy and Mike. so tired and old.
Why am I saying this out loud?
And welcome everybody to And This Is Why I Love Comics. I'm Andy, and Nate in front of me. No, wait. That's Mike.
Yes, retelling tales of a more innocent youth.
Right, yeah, on yours. I didn't have any college experience like that before. Wow.
No, talk about higher education. I think that right. Dude was pretty well lit up at the same time, too. Whee! Right. Yeah, that was...
Boy, welcome to the podcast. we're talking about professors who are not shy.
No, they... They give you critiques and then some, apparently.
Right. This is your first time with the podcast. Welcome. We are two old guys who know each other and talk about comics. And that's what we do. We talk about naked professors and other strange tales. Usually it's Mike that has the strange tales. But no, that's his specialty.
Somehow it finds me. It's not like I'm actually out there aggressively going like, can I find something weird to happen today?
Right. We're friends, we're fathers, we're comic book collectors. We love a lot of things that are nerdy, geeky, and popular now that we had to go through when they were less popular. I have trouble with words late at night.
Wait, when the nude professor bomb gets dropped, it kind of throws off your pattern. Now. I can't look at a candle the same way.
Yeah, you were talking about Indiana Jones earlier, so now I think Sean Connery as the professor. So now I've got this image in my head of naked Sean Connery, the professor with candles.
That's for blasphemy.
That's right. How do you like me now?
I was the other guy.
I'll take the rapist for 20.
Swords for 500? Your mother, Trebek.
So welcome to the podcast. Usually pick a comic book or two or series to talk about. And we do have one for this evening with just Spider-Man as the character. I'm not sure we're going to talk about it as yet, but it is Kraven's Last Hunt from 1987. So, spoilers. Yeah. Go read it now so you're not spoiled later about it. All I can think about is Naked Professors. So, this may be a short review for me, because that's
whatever you had originally ready to go.
Thanks, Thunder Chicken, and all that.
So at some point, Kevin from Thunder Chicken needs to put in a new song called Naked Professor. Right. My friend sent me a photo, I guess a Target exclusive figure for the Mandalorian. He's like, oh, I really like this, but the issue was just for one figure. And it did have a mini, so it was the Mandalorian himself, and then it was the Star Wars Black series, right? So you have the Mandalorian figure, you have the Baby Yoda, and then you have this little octopi looking thing. And the price tag on that, what do you think?
35?
Oh, very, very close.
$38.99. Wow.
Do you remember getting Star Wars figures when you were a kid back in the day when you'd mash the figures together when they would fight and you pew, pew, pew. Yeah. A reasonably priced figure. Yeah. But my mercy, $38.99. Yeah. The 5 points. But even the Super 7 produces those reaction figures. Yeah. And even those are $20, if not more. I cannot justify, getting my kids. Mercifully, I was in the toy industry and the prices were not getting this outrageous. So I was able to get, what they were interested in for, either through connections or whatever. But mercy, this seems like there's no kid on the planet who's buying action figures anymore.
Nope. We should have my brother on, and he's a big action figure guy. And he complains to both of us through text about how these, $100 action figures are going, and they're some of them don't even look that great, but they're just so expensive now, and it's not for little kids. Little kids wouldn't even be able to afford any of this stuff. Even the simplest action figures are like $15 at the least, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big Masters of the Universe fan, and mercifully, the one line that they've got three distinct toy lines coming out at the moment, and one of them I'm still getting, and it's the one based off of the CGI Netflix, because it's so completely new and different that I really appreciate it for that. The other ones are just like basically repopping. Here's what the old figures look like, but with modern articulation, and at $25 a pop. I'm like, nah, that's okay. I got all the originals. Right. Why would I want to get these new ones that just have the exact same, but they're just better articulated? It's like, nah, pass. And then the Kevin Smith figures Masterverse. It's like, nope, good.
Yeah, I wasn't taking that show. I really did. My two older kids liked it. My three older kids liked it. It just bugged me. And I don't know why. I don't have as much interest in it as you do, but it just was not the same.
Yeah, yeah. But the CG one, because they've been able to basically say, we've done away with all previous continuity and you're not familiar with these characters as they are in this one, it's like a whole different, like, alternative take. It's like, man, I love it. You know, I'm a big fan of this one. Yeah, which seems weird because it was the one I was the least interested in initially, and it's now the one that's like, yeah, this is fantastic.
Yeah, maybe because it had little to do with what you recognized, that you were just appreciated the fresh take, and you know, there's some Star Wars stuff that's kind of Elseworld-y that I think I like better because it's just not connected to anything that I like or dislike.
Yeah, so bogged down. But yeah, but those figures for the new ones, I think that's the least expensive, and those are $15. As a kid, at Christmas time, you used to get like a handful. I mean, like, you'd almost like have to scoop them up with two arms. You'd get, you know, like, I got like five or six Star Wars figures. I got a vehicle, and I got, you know, this play set. Right. And that was like Christmas. And I was like, man, that was great. Now it's like, I got a figure because that's what I could get.
$40, so should I even take it out of the box or turn around and resell it for $150?
Yep, you know? Flip it.
We should do a Christmas toy episode and have my
brother. Yeah.
You won't even tell them it's recorded. We'll just put them on the phone and talk.
What do you think about this? And by the way, you know, if we splice enough of what you said together, it did say that you would give us the approval for your voice being recorded. I grant approval.
I, of course, would love to be on your show.
Anytime, you feel free to use my voice wherever possible.
And if he doesn't do it, we can just pretend to be him like now and have a whole episode just him, you know, complaining about action figures and how articulations break, you know, even on the $100 figure, that thing better be so well crafted that it'll never
break. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's gotta be, speaking of like high end and ridiculous, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but it's just something that I was driving through Tiny Town that I live in, and
it's called Tiny Town.
Yeah, we were driving. We just left this restaurant, and as we were exiting the parking lot, we saw next to it was this other building that said Micro Brew Fertilizer, and I'm thinking like, what the heck is this? I mean, like, you know, he's talking about like $100 in the articulation. Apparently now there's micro brewed fertilizer out there that, you know, you spend an exorbitant amount of money on in order to get topsoil that's top quality. And it's like micro brewed, though. That was what threw me. And it's like fertilizer. And it's just like somehow they've refined poop. And I never thought that was...
Yeah, the corn.
Yeah, we filtered out the corn, but the those little carrot nubbins, they're still there. It's just like, wow. And it's like, who's doing this? Who's like going like, you know what the world needs? Like IPA versions of fertilizer. And it's like, oh, we got like, you know, like, do they have some weird hipster names to it as well? Oh, you know? Yeah. We call this one the bottoms up. You know, it's just like, what the heck? Who's like, I mean, and there's probably people out there that are listening that are probably like, oh yeah, I'd get that. I'd be all over that. I stopped the car and got out to reread it because it was like, what? But again, you know, I mean, people pay so much money and under the guise of like, well, it's got to be better. You know, this $100 action figure has got to be better. This micro-brewed fertilizer has got to be better than regular fertilizer. You know, this is coming from contented cows or something. I don't know. Yeah, it's just, it seems really, really weird.
Well, how could we take advantage of this into the comic books?
Micro-brewed.
I mean, they have digests. Is that just micro-digested manga? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it could be. Like, maybe this is fertilizer from mice, right, instead of cows. And, you know, mice are vermin.
Right. Vermin. Yeah. That's funny you mentioned the word vermin.
Did you see that? Did you catch that? It's like, wow.
That's so smooth.
Yeah, it's like silk.
It's like, wow, you wrote that down. Let me see your paper. Yeah, Kraven's Last Hunt. We mentioned vermin because he's a character in it.
One of the key characters somehow.
He is, and we'll get into that, but I had no idea who that was. So
nor did I.
Okay, good. Marvel Comics, 1987. J.M. DeMatteis did the writing. Mike Zeck did the art.
He did. Coming from the Secret Wars, we've reviewed him from Secret Wars already.
Right. So, I mean, right away, I was pretty psyched about that.
A shirtless Captain America.
Shirtless Captain America. Hello. Bob McLeod did the inking. Rick Parker did the lettering. Jackson Sharon Zeck. No relation. I'm sure there is a relation there. Did the colors. Jim Salicrup was the editor. Jim Shooter, editor in chief. Now, this series was a little different than other ones we've done because this was actually part 1 through 6 of the regular series, a couple regular series,
interspersed.
It was Web of Spider-Man.
Spectacular Spider-Man. Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, and The Amazing Spider-Man.
Right. So they did 2 issues of each, you know, rotated through and then rotated through again. 6 issues. Wonderful Spider-Man. You know, my favorite character in the world is Spider-Man. Totally not true.
Guess what? We got this story.
The only thing I like about Spider-Man, Mike, is that he was the character that introduced us to each other. Like, that's the only appreciation that I have of Spider-Man. And my kids love him.
He's all over the place now.
Right. And there are times I don't mind him, but I'm just not the Spider-Man fan that Matt 10.0 is. Are you a Spider-Man fan?
Concept of Spider-Man I enjoy. I like the teenager that is actually mistaken as a full-grown adult, you know, that he's in doing all these heroics but yet still has a teenage life, and I think that component I really, really enjoy. In preparation for this, and believe it or not, I do have some preparations for these podcasts.
You read the book this time?
I gave it a cursory glance. I went through the audiobook version of it.
Oh, good.
There was like, I knew that Kraven was part of the Sinister Six. Huh, let me see if I could like name off who was in the Sinister Six. And I couldn't get through, like, I got like 5, which I thought was pretty impressive. And it took me quite a while to get to that level. So I'm not a huge fan of Spider-Man. I know enough of him. I know of his characters. Like I said, you know, I like the fact that this character, more so than like Bruce Wayne or, you know, Clark Kent has a little bit more, but but as almost more of his life is recounted as a civilian than it is as a superhero. Whereas, like, Bruce Wayne is barely Bruce Wayne. He's always Batman, and then on occasion you'll see him as Bruce Wayne. And there's just not a whole lot of stories there, you know, that really evolve around Bruce Wayne being Bruce Wayne. You know, the same with Clark Kent. You know, and you don't get that big, huge cast of secondary characters, you know, because Spider-Man's got his secondary characters, heroes and villains that he associates with. But then Peter Parker's got a huge cast of characters that are just Peter Parker centric. Yeah. And that I do appreciate and I do like that. But I couldn't say I picked up any Spider-Man book with any regularity. In fact, I think the last one I did was an attempt when John Byrne was trying to relaunch Spider-Man, like he did with Superman, calling it like Chapter One or something like that. And that was the last time I bought a Spider-Man book with the intent of getting it on the regular. And then I just kind of like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah, I would argue that I like Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery better than Batman. So
yeah,
he's got that. But it's pretty bad when you like the villains of the character more than the character. You're almost rooting for them all the time.
They're also more tragic. You know, I mean, it's like, and they have different motivations in many ways. Yeah, I'm insane. Guess what? I'm more insane than you, and I'm still more insane than... But this time, instead of being insane with, you know, smiling fish, I'm insane with a coin, or I'm insane with a question mark. I'm insane with a, you know, scary, you know, gas. And it's like, you're all the same character. You know, you just have a different way of being insane. And that's, yeah, kind of tiresome. Where this one is like, you know, you got a rich businessman who decides that green gas for him was going to turn him into... is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but he's also this rich philanthropist. And then, you know, Kraven, this aristocracy from the former Russian era, pre-communist era. And then, you know, they all have their own backstories. And, you know, Dr. Connors was trying to, you know, figure out how to regenerate his lost limb and went a little crazy. So, I mean, they all have something a little deeper, a little bit more tragic in some cases. More and not human. Just, I'm crazy.
Kraven's The Last Hunt. So I think it's, the big title is Fearful Symmetry, Kraven's Hunt, or something like that.
Yeah.
The Last Hunt. Overall, these six issues, what
do with you so think? Far.
What? You know, this is supposed to be the fifth or sixth most popular Spider-Man storyline ever. So it's up there, top 10 for most people.
Yeah. All in all, I think it was okay. I think there was a level that it worked really well. And then there's aspects of it where I felt like, wow, this is like an attempt to be what you couldn't pull off with this kind of a character. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you read Alan Moore's Miracle Man or Marvel Man, whatever, you know, if you read Miracle Man and it has similar like symbolism, and Watchmen would always end each panel with kind of like the last panel on the page would kind of be reflected on the first panel of the next page in some capacity. And there's a lot more symbolic aspects going on. This was an attempt to do that, and in some ways it succeeded. In some ways it was like, whew, that's a little heavy-handed. You know, it's like, I would almost equate it, and going back to gaming terms, is the equivalent of like saying that your D&D game that you just GM'd is on the same level as J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. You know, it's like, no, the game isn't nearly that deep, oh, that I used to rich with that.
All my games were better than the Lord of the Rings.
Yes, you know, but it's just like, to me, it felt like that. It felt like there was something that was trying too hard to have some deep-seated symbolisms and deep-seated like subtleties and wordplay that just was like, wow, it tried too hard, as opposed to it being just this natural extension. And I did also feel like, and I don't know if it was just this era of Spider-Man, but he didn't have any of his like quippy dialogues. He didn't have any of his like trademark humor. Spider-Man was just kind of angry. It didn't feel like Spider-Man. Would I give it a percentage? I would say I'd give it probably a pretty high, like a B, maybe B plus at the best, as far as like if I were to give it a grade, but I wouldn't put it as a like an A. I just remember I bought these as they came out.
Oh, you did?
And thinking like, yeah, yeah. And so I still have the floppy editions of these things, and the, yeah, the overall thinking, my, this is going to be great. What worked for it was the fact that, you know, because there was three titles a month coming out with the story, it was pretty wrapped up. Within 2 months, you had all six parts of the story. And I was like, wow, that was great. And I just remember thinking that was good. It was the same writer, artist over it all. So you didn't get some weird like transition to like, oh, it's this guy's art for the next part. Like when they did that with Superman, like after the death of Superman, they were doing all that. Like this issue picks up where this issue left off and this one picks up where that one left off. And you had different artists and different writers. And it's just like, no, it doesn't. You know, just don't bother trying to keep continuity between these titles because it doesn't make any sense. This one really did. And it kept it going as far as the storyline. The only thing that I like about it at this point that really sticks out is the fact that I believe they have kept Kraven dead. This version of Kraven dead since the story.
Oh,
oops,
oh,
spoilers.
You think so, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, there so was
it shows
a
you how
other. There was a sequel where he was a ghost. So. And I know there is, like I just sent you on a text, new series coming out with Kraven, which may bring him back, but whatever. It's been 20 years or 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's about time. I really wanted to like this story. You know, mm-hmm. let me just say that. It was better than a Jim Starlin story.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty easy to do.
Compared to as, no offense to Mr. Starlin, but I have yet to find anything that I was wowed with him, even though they're really popular. It was, like you said, a very dark story. Spider-Man was unfriendly and unpleasant when he was in it, which was not a whole lot. Which, I mean, if you've probably read the whole, you know, you're reading the entire series, and this just, like you said, it was 2 months and it was done. Probably went pretty fast and made a whole lot more sense than just reading it. This was my first read of it. This obviously was a reread for you, but it was my first time reading it. And I'd heard stories about it, so I kind of knew what happened and why Kraven was dead at the end. Spoiler alert, like you said, I still hadn't learned what built up to it and stuff that, so I was coming in pretty new. I just didn't really like, I wanted to say I don't get it, but I think I got it. It was okay, like you said. It was, you seemed to like it more than I did. I'd give it like a good solid C. You know, it had this character, Vermin, was a main character, and I knew nothing about him, which wasn't a bad thing. I just wasn't familiar with the character. Seeing that character, you could have replaced him with the Lizard or, you know, Killer Croc or, you know, any of those. I know he's not a Spider-Man villain, but, you know, the Jackal or... You know, there seems to be a theme of animals.
Rhino.
You know, you could throw out any character. Solomon Grundy could be living in the sewer. So I didn't really figure out why I should care about the Vermin. He was not very interesting. He controlled rats. Very little backstory other than apparently they had met before and Captain America had helped defeat him. Kraven wanted to prove that he was better than Spider-Man, which kind of was his theme, was, you know, I'm not only Spider-Man, but I'm better than him and I could defeat him alone. The story was okay. It was really a Kraven story, not a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, it was his last hunt. You gotta give him some time to shine.
Which I'm okay with, too. It was just okay, though. There were some cool moments with Mary Jane thought Spider-Man was dead. Then Spider-Man was, you know, not to get into the story, but I'm gonna get into the story. but Kraven was dressing up Spider-Man and proving he was better. And she knew right away that he wasn't Peter. It was kind of neat. I'm not sure, you know, she wasn't too up. She was upset, and maybe it didn't show all of the moments of her upsetness. Kind of neat. Like, I think they had just gotten married. Yeah.
Yeah. They referenced, I was like, we've been newlyweds for only a month now.
Yeah.
getting their new apartment.
That relationship I always liked, so when it was about her thoughts, that was kind of... He's killed, I think, in the first issue, at the end of the first issue, Spider-Man is quote-unquote killed.
Yes.
Buried. There's a lot of symbolism with spiders and rats. Like, Mike Zeck must have had a field day drawing rats and spiders.
Yeah, this is it. If you ever wanted to do it, this is it.
You thought McFarland used spiders a lot. You know, this story had a lot of spiders in it as well. I don't know. I think I was just expecting a bigger story, which is my fault, because it really was a personal story. Wanted to like it so much that it was... I was underwhelmed. It was, you know, for being so popular, I wasn't too impressed by it.
And that's where, like, you know, the street level heroes, you know, the Daredevils and stuff like that, it's always kind of like, where do you find an epic story that can be told about a street level kind of character? But I, you know, I did like the fact that, and this is my own opinion, but I like it when there's a character arc that it comes to a closure. You know, it's like, how many times can the Joker break out of the asylum? And they're like, oh my gosh, he did it again. Oh, he escaped again? Holy smokes. That guy's... Yeah, it gets to the point where it's like, why? Why is this character still around if this is, you know, like, what kind of judicial system is there that's like going, well, let's put him back where he broke out 18 times this past month, you know, let's put him, yeah, he said he wouldn't, so we're gonna have to take him at his word. And you're just like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. So I mean, what I liked was the fact that it was truly more of a Kraven story, as you said, than it was anything else. But it gave that character like an arc, and kind of like, the character was kind of a joke to begin with. He was this big game hunter trying to make it that character a little bit more substantial. Was able to do so by giving him a decent closure to this character. You know, it's like, I never was able to defeat the Spider-Man. It's like, that makes sense. You know, kind of like how the Joker's always out to best Batman and never is able to. This one is like, I've never been able to do it, but this is it. I'm going to do it now or never. And puts his all into it. Not only does he want to best Spider-Man, he wants to, you know, show that he can walk a mile in his shoes and prove to be better, as he noted. And then that's like, I've done it. I've done everything I've accomplished. I've set out to do. I don't have any other goals left. I've, you know, beat all the beasts out there. And the one that was the most persistent was Spider-Man. And I never was able to beat him until now. And I did. So
yeah, I don't need him. I kind of felt like a kindred spirit in Kraven because, you know, a lot of it was he had done all he could. He was getting older. He knew his time was getting shorter. You know, I almost thought he was going to say, oh, you know, I found out I'm dying or something like
that. Yeah.
But that never happened. And, you know, we're getting older and, you know, we've accomplished quite a bit in our lives, but, you know, there's that, you know, just one thing that we haven't done or anything like that. And, you know, so I kind of felt like I knew Kraven a lot better through this story. You know, I'm like, yeah, I know, I understand, you know, physical fitness and everything. We're top of the line. And, you know, what else are we going to do in our lives that, you know, proves that we're superior? So, you know, I kind of knew what he was talking about, but
to go out on top,
and everything.
He had to do one last thing and that was it. Then, you know, it was kind of the proverbial bucket list. Yeah. You know, it's like, I've did everything, checked everything off. And what else is there for me to do? Why I keep going.
The more you talk about the story, the more I like it. So,
yeah,
you know, I will say that. Out of, I'm glad we read a story where he had the black costume, because that's my favorite costume. Like, that's the one I think he should wear.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was wondering. It's like, were they planning the Venom thing at this point? Is that why Spider-Man wasn't so quippy? You know, because why he was always mad was at the suit. But then there's aspects where the suit gets ripped and doesn't, you know, fill itself back in. And it's like, oh, so it's cloth,
right? Yeah,
Yeah. So there wasn't this, you know, it wasn't still this alien symbiote kind of a thing.
And I think Mike Zecraw is a good black Spider-Man costume.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about his art. What do you think of this one?
It was his art throughout. I mean, this time for once, like unlike Secret Wars, where I felt like, ooh, that's not Mike Zack. I think they had somebody, you know, one of their bullpen assistants come in and fill in
Mike Beck
for him. Yeah, exactly. But this was truly Mike Zack throughout, and I appreciated it a lot more. Obviously, there were some aspects that were spot on amazing, and then there was some that was like, little weak, but can tell that he's maybe not one that's into the deeper symbolism stuff. And it always, like, you know, like the unveiling of Kraven's face, you know, as he was pulling the mask off and he's coming, and then pages later the same thing would happen again, he's coming. And it's just like, it was a little heavy-handed, and I felt like it was like, well, this isn't an artist who's, you know, is a more literal artist, meaning that it's like, I draw what I know is there, less on the, when it becomes abstract, it's not quite there. You know, a lot of the spiders being used and a rat being used right next to each other, and then they would have these little like fights of a spider versus a rat, and then that meant like, oh, later on the same page is going to be Spider-Man going after vermin. Wow. You know, it's like the symbolism, like I said, it was trying to draw some deeper symbolism, but it was like, yeah, that wasn't really working. It was too on the nose. I mean, what was the Watchmen story within the story kind of a thing? Yeah, where they were trying to... Yeah, and that had some weird symbolic connections going on. And it's like... But that one wasn't so overt in its, like, symbology. You know, it's like, wow, this is it. You know, but I did like Mike Zeck's art in it all. It was very consistent. You know, you knew Kraven was Kraven, what he looked like. There wasn't a whole lot of like, ooh, that's the off-model version of the character. You know, the vermin character looked pretty consistent. You know, he draws a pretty decent skyline, a lot of rain. I would, you know, things that are probably a little bit more difficult, especially the digging his way out of the mud. You know, that's difficult to try to convey mud without it looking like slime, without it looking like, you know, all these other things of him emerging from it. So Zeck did a really good job. And even though if it was a little bit out of his normal element, I think the fighting sequences were where he does best. And there's a lot of those.
I agree. It was solid comic book storytelling. He's got good detail. He was, like you said, consistent. Like, it was solid throughout. This is the way I draw this. This is the way I draw that. It didn't change. Different inker. Like, it was Mike Zeck art. Probably the best. Definitely better than Secret Wars.
Of course.
With the different artists and stuff. And I, you know, I appreciated Secret Wars for what it was. Standard. I don't want to say standard because he's better than most.
It's recognizable. Yeah. You know that's Mike Zeck.
Yeah. And he's got a good sense and a good storytelling sense. You know, wasn't Mignola's, wasn't Perez, wasn't the Tim Sale typical, maybe?
It was what you would expect from this era, the 80s. You know, it was comic book artists doing comic book art. You know, it's not an illustrator who was, you know, trying to come down to another level, or... It wasn't some, you know, like, I want to bring my own approach to it, anatomy. Like, nope, this is comic book anatomy. This is comic book perspectives. This is, you know, a lot of it was drawn the way you would expect it to be drawn. And coming to it from a different perspective, the villain's perspective. And technically, for all intents and purposes, he won, you know, which is a rare thing.
I was kind of hoping that Kraven would stay naked for, like, the whole issue.
We did kind of avoid talking about,
like your professor.
Yeah, he likes to, yeah, strut around performance pieces in the nothings. But yeah, it was, he was doing that quite a few times throughout the series. No, that loincloth wasn't really there, you know. It was more there for our protection than his, let's just say that.
Nothing underneath that.
Yeah, he's gone full commando for that outfit. But, yeah, several times. And we did find out at long last that Peter Parker is, you know, the great debate of... I was going to go a little bit different, but the boxers or briefs debate is definitely confirmed. He is a tidy whiteys wearer. So, yeah, there was, you know, several moments of like, huh. But, yeah, if we do get to see naked Peter Parker as well, coming back from the verge of death moments and digging himself out. So, yeah, a little something for the ladies.
Not Star Wars raunchiness, you know.
No, no.
It's like looking out from the bushes or, you know.
Yep, scouring. Yeah, James Rhodes and his inappropriate comments towards yes, I've been waiting here forever. I just waited till you got out of it before we decided to fight. That was just convenience.
It fit the character. Like, it wasn't awkward where you'd think, oh, there's no way that Kraven would do that. I knew Kraven as a character and stuff, but I didn't understand his full background until I read this.
Yeah, how does that compare to, like, first appearance Kraven? You know, like, when there was the Ditko and Lee era of Spider-Man, when they first introduced Kraven, you know, was he always kind of like this Russian aristocrat, or was he more of like a Harold Houdini showman that was out there just to kind of like always impressing people with his, you know, his skill set that was above and beyond anybody else's?
Right, yeah. I'm more of the hunter, you know, I'm got to get the next challenge kind of thing. That's how, yeah, I always pictured him.
Yeah, Jack Hanna on steroids. Have you ever watched Jack Hanna? That dude gets angry. I don't know if it's just something that I just catch on to, but like, he doesn't put up with anything when it comes to these animals. And it's not like it's in the animal's best interest either. It's just like, you know, oh, that snake's getting away. Somebody needs to just grab hold of that snake. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, it's just like, why is he so angry?
Steve Irwin seemed like a genuine, you know,
yeah,
like everybody and give everybody their time. But, you know, there's some people probably a little high on themselves. Yep. Just like any other career. And we've skirted around the ending of the series, but it ends up, you know, Kraven thinks he's done everything he could, and then he kills himself, which...
Yeah.
You know, I knew he died. I hadn't realized that it was a suicide. And I thought that was a brave statement for them having to do that to the character. So I liked the story that turned into that direction. I wasn't really expecting that. And I did read later on that DeMatteis got a little flack, like, oh, you're saying suicide is an answer. And I'm thinking, what? That's, you know,
yeah.
Can't you just tell a story without... You know, you're on the side of just because I wrote it doesn't mean I approve of it. You know, you're telling the story,
yeah,
of a life. You know, he also, yeah, you know, he's killed other people. I'm not saying
he's a villain. Yeah, yeah. He was never really portrayed as a hero at any point. He's actually the villain.
Right. And I thought that was, you know, that's the fan base getting irrational or whatever. But certainly made the story wrap up in a surprising way. What do you think of the ending?
Yeah, like I said, it was the closure that none of these characters ever get. And it was like, you know, it's like, oh, the death of Superman. And it was like, boy, what a lackluster death that was. It's like, doom. He gets, yeah, they create a character that comes out of nowhere. Basically, there's no justification for this character other than, yeah, he's going to be the one who kills Superman. Yeah, big whoop. Yeah, you know, it's like all the villains, they couldn't have come up with something that these villains figured it out. Nothing. They came up with a brand new character just to do that. And then even then, it was like, he just gets punched and that's how Superman dies? You know, it's like nothing clever, nothing amazing, nothing revolutionary. And then the same with, like, oh, Batman, depending on which one of his deaths you were reading, it's either he got zapped by Darkseid's laser eyes, mega beams, or, you know, he blew up with a helicopter and, you know, then he died. And you're like, these are your big characters that everybody knows, and you give them kind of these lackluster outs.
Personally, my Batman died in bed with Selina Kyle, but you know, we'll go back to your statement.
Yeah, with a smile on his face. His mom was in. They said my mother was insane. And it's like, well, okay, it does question some of his sanity as to why he was even a villain, why he was into this hunting. Yeah, a lot of it could be a question mark about was he really sane? He was always the villain. So it's kind of like, well, maybe, this was in his own way, strange way, he figured this was an out. It made sense, even though he might not have been completely right in the head to begin with. So I really thought that gave the character a lot more gravitas than probably deserved. If it was any other way, because the character was kind of a joke character. It's like, I'm the big game hunter. I'm on TV. I'm going to hunt down Spider-Man. And if I think that was how he kind of came around, was that J. Jonah Jameson hired Kraven because he was a big game hunter to hunt down Spider-Man. And I think that's how he kind of...
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends episode.
That could have very well been that too. A 1960s story or a 1980s cartoon.
One of the two.
Yeah, which I loved that cartoon. In this case, it worked for Kraven. It gave him the ending. And then, it's like, they really need to do that for a lot of these characters, heroes and villains alike. Let them live their life and give them a good, satisfying conclusion. And then move on to somebody else. You've got enough characters. It's not like, we don't want to let this one character ever go. It's our cash cow. And it's like, yeah, but you've got a lot of other ones. And I think that's why it was kind of safe for them to do this with Kraven, because it was like, yeah, even if he's never coming back, it wasn't like that big of a loss. He was unique, but it wasn't that big of a loss.
And if you got to keep the trademark or the copyright, you can always do a flashback story or something. But keep him dead,
So I thought that was well done. Obviously the last issue is just, redemption for Peter Parker to kind of come back and set the status quo as being, yep, we can pick up our stories as we normally had them well before this. No consequence of what just happened. Right. So,
yeah, and Kraven was killing people and just beating the tar out of things. So, Spider-Man got a bad rap because he was dressed up as Spidey. There was some element where, he was wanted by the police again because he was this outlaw. I wondered if later on they played with that a little bit, like early Batman kind of hunted by the law, but I'm not really willing to go research that at all.
Not for this one.
But, my favorite Spider-Man is when he's flirting with Black Cat and married to MJ and just living his life. black suit costume and, those early episodes. I really like those. But other than that, it's Spider-Man.
One thing I did note, and that is there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue at all in this book. It was Spider-Man's thoughts. It was Kraven's thoughts. It was Vermin's thoughts. I would say, there wasn't really enough dialogue to fill one of the six issues.
Right, yeah, it was a lot of Kraven's thoughts. I think probably MJ, they had a lot of her thoughts, too.
Yeah. And this was also kind of, again, coming off the heels of The Dark Knight Returns, where things converted from thought balloons to thought blocks, and colored thought blocks to help represent different individuals. So you knew that this was Kraven's thought blocks versus Vermin's thought blocks. I think all in all, the story ended well for the character. How the journey was, the destination was good. It was just the journey to get to that destination was like,
Yeah, this could have been three issues, easily. They did a lot of up with him trying to break out of his grave, quote unquote. But it was solid. The more you talk about it with me, the more I liked the story. And while it wasn't, I still don't know why it was as popular or why it isn't as popular. If this is a solid fifth or sixth most popular Spider-Man story, then I question whether there's really that many good Spider-Man stories.
Yes.
With the death of Gwen Stacy, number one, because that's probably, you know, the most famous.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites. But other than that, you know, it's, you know, how many times can you see Ben get shot by the crook? And I mean, origins aside, I guess this wasn't too bad for a Spider-Man story. Sorry, I'm trying to fight a sneeze.
I think what justifies people's assumption that this isn't like the top five is the fact that it had consequences. You know, most books have very little lasting effect, meaning that the issue can end, and if you miss that issue and you read the next one, you would not have missed anything of consequence or missed something that was like, oh man, what happened in this issue? It's like, now this thing actually, like, Kraven died and he has remained. So, like you said, with some other incidentals here or there, but yeah, Bucky Barnes.
Know, yeah.
Characters that'll never come back.
Right. Barry Allen. He'll
never return. Never see those characters ever again.
So glad we don't read new comics.
Yeah, Hal Jordan is never coming around.
Right. He's just Parallax now, right?
Yep. Always a bad guy, you know. A man without fear, yeah, they go their ways and never come back. Phoenix, I remember that when she died. So, Andy, I know we've already hit almost the end, but let me ask you this. I've got a trivia about Spider-Man.
A Spider-Man quiz for me, huh?
Yes. I don't know how much of this you want to go through.
Well,
but there's plenty. And it's multiple choice. So if you do feel stumped, there are options. So let's test how much of a fan, which we already said you weren't, of Spider-Man. But we'll find out how much of a fan you are or are not. So ready for this one?
Sure. Let's do this.
All right. So this is brought to you by Useful Trivia. Not that we're sponsored. I just want to give them the credit. Where credit is due.
All right. In defense, it's midnight. So
yeah. So when you fail every question, so we could probably rip through a couple of these, and we'll see how far we can get.
Peter Parker.
Dang, that was already without even answering the asking the question. Okay, what comic book did Spider-Man first appear in?
Well, I don't know the number to it. I know it was Amazing Fantasy.
All right. Yeah, because the four they gave you was Amazing Spider-Man number 1, Marvel Tales 17, Tales to Astonish number 8, or Amazing Fantasy 15.
15, okay. So I didn't know the number, but I knew it.
Yep.
I can see the comic book cover image in my head.
Who was the first supervillain Spider-Man ever encountered?
That's a good one.
We have a Green Goblin. We have a Supercharger. Terrible Tinkerer and Dr. Octopus.
Was originally without the choices going to say Doc Ock, but I have a feeling it was the Green Goblin.
Okay, I'm going to press the Green Goblin button. Oh, that sound.
Supercharger, isn't it?
Supercharger. Yes. Amazing Fantasy number 18, his second issue. Spider-Man battled Supercharger, the living battery. Move over, Energizer Bunny. We have Supercharger. What supervillain kidnapped and murdered Peter Parker's girlfriend, Gwen Stacy?
Well, that was the Green Goblin, according to the movie, and that was according to the comic as well.
Correct.
Yes.
The downside, though, is that I don't really consider the Green Goblin murdered her. He technically let her drop. It was going to die, but she didn't die until the whiplash snapped her neck.
Right.
Well, and that was only due because of Spider-Man.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a, I think there's like lawyers who would probably be able to pull that off as being justified as like, her death could have happened, but
I did wonder why he never did. You know, he could do all these amazing things with his webs. Was he not able to do like a net underneath her?
Yeah, I don't think even at that time he was making specialty webbing. I think it was like, you know, it was just a string, and then that's all it was. It wasn't like you made nets or, you know, bouncing balls and all this other stuff.
Balls.
We're back to Hawkeye again. Which character bullied Peter Parker in high school? Do you remember that the bully's name?
Hal Jordan. I mean, Flash Gordon. I mean, Flash Thompson.
Bingo, bango, football star, right. Flash Thompson. Number five. So far, you've gone 4 out of the 5 correct. So for not being a Spider-Man fan, you're doing well. Speaking of this a little bit earlier. So here we go. What did Spider-Man bring home from the first Secret Wars?
It wasn't a hangover.
Not
a new wife.
Josh. Oh, they said, yep, that was actually on here. It was new girlfriend.
Oh, what?
Alien flu, yes. brought home a new girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear the other choices.
Yeah, alien flu, new costume, or a keychain.
It was the new costume turned into Venom later.
Bum, 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 bum. Yes. Doing well so far. When Spider-Man was first offered membership in the Avengers, he was required to catch what superpowered being as a test. So when he was offered membership in the Avengers, he was required to catch a... Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But it was either catch the Wasp, Doctor Doom, Kang the Conqueror, or the Hulk.
Wow, those are all hard choices. I don't blame him for not doing it.
I mean, yeah.
The Wasp would be the easiest one. Sorry, Janet. Just need to make a comb. But
yeah, that's all it takes for her vanity.
Right. I'm going to say Doom.
Let's see. Dr. Doom. Oh, nope. Afraid not, sir. Afraid not.
Hulk, then?
No, it was the Hulk. In Spider-Man Annual number 3, he was offered membership if he could capture the Hulk.
Wow.
And return him to the headquarters.
Sure. Why not just try and catch the Beyonder?
Yeah, he's Spider-Man, not Superman. Okay, well, we're on question number 7. We'll get through the top 10 here.
Oh,
yep.
I'm on a roll.
Yeah, who was the guest speaker at Peter Parker's high school graduation? When he left high school, was it J. Jonah Jameson, Dr. Otto Octavius, Reed Richards, or Captain America? Remember, he did a PSA.
Wow.
Stay in school, kids.
They could all be legitimate. I was going to say Doc Ock, but it's probably J. Jonah Jameson. I'll say that.
You are correct, sir.
Yes.
In Amazing Spider-Man number 28 when he graduated from high school.
Only guest speaker. 28 issues in.
Yeah, that's what kind of throws me. Huh. Here we go. Number 8. Why did Stan Lee reject Jack Kirby as the original Spider-Man artist?
Jack was too good.
Yeah, that was actually the cover of Amazing Fantasy number 15. Gave it to Ditko. The answers, options are he wanted too much money. Kirby wanted too much money. Kirby missed a deadline. His drawings were too heroic. He was mad about a baseball game.
I'll say missed a deadline?
I say that's no. You are incorrect, sir. I don't think Kirby ever missed a deadline. That dude was a workhorse. So his drawings were too heroic, or he's mad about a baseball game.
I'm going to say the baseball game, because that's the one I don't know about.
unfortunately, it is his drawings were too heroic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so apparently Kirby had drawn the first 6 pages. He said that it was basically the character was too heroic, and he wanted him to look more like a teenager kid and not some superhero.
Okay, I can understand
superhero.
That. I don't really want to see a Kirby Spider-Man anyway.
Yeah, even that era Kirby, when it wasn't so blocky even, it was still kind of like, a little off model. It was still kind of a little bit thick. What was the first Spider-Man spin-off series? He's had several, and now there's just countless spin-offs.
What?
Untold Tales of Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Sensational Spider-Man, or Marvel Team-Up?
No, it's probably Spectacular.
Yes, it was. The Spectacular Spider-Man was a photographic novel designed to appeal to older readers. It only lasted 2 issues.
Oh, really?
but it represented the first Spider-Man spin-off publication. Yeah, because later on it was called Peter Parker. It was Boston. from Peter Boston.
Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's Spectacular Spider-Man. I was going to say Team Up because I knew that came out early on. And then what color is Mary Jane Watson's hair in the comics, not in the movies? Yeah. Do the carpet, the curtains match the carpet?
Well, I'll say red because it's the obvious one.
You are correct.
Yes. Keep going. I want all right. More.
Yeah. So out of the top 10, you got 1, 2, 3 wrong. You're at 70%, sir.
Okay. Just like high school.
I feel like I'm right in this with a teenage hero.
I'm in the zone.
Okay, these are going to be maybe a little easier. We'll find out. What was the name of Peter Parker's uncle?
Uncle Ben Reilly.
Yep, as opposed to Uncle Ben's Rice.
Right.
Why did J. Jonah Jameson prefer Lance Bannon's Spider-Man photos over Peter Parker? Well, the choices are, they were cheaper, they had better lighting, they made Spider-Man look bad, or Bannon was his nephew. You are correct. Yes.
That J. Jonah Jameson.
He's always a wily one. Which superhero convinced Spider-Man to reveal his secret identity to the public in Amazing Spider-Man 533? Holy crap, that's a lot of issues.
What superhero, you said?
Yep. What superhero convinced Spider-Man to reveal his secret identity to the public in Amazing Spider-Man 533?
Iron Man.
You are correct.
Yeah. See, I know some things.
Yeah, got a casual. I got knowledge.
I think that was Civil War, right? Or...
Yeah. That was part of that whole superhero, like, privacy or whatever they were wanting to tout.
Do something to make everybody forget.
Snapping fingers here or there. What superpowered being is also J. Jonah Jameson's son? The Fabulous Frogman?
Nope.
Man-Wolf? Hobgoblin or Gatekeeper?
Man Wolf.
Yeah. Makes a man of a meal. Oh, that's Man Wolf.
I had that for lunch today. Not a man. That was later. But,
yeah, that's what happens after you eat that stuff. Woo! Makes you howl. Who gave Spider-Man a pep talk after he was defeated in his very first encounter with Dr. Octopus? Well, that's an obscure one. This is Human Torch, Iron Man, Aunt May, or Captain America.
I'm going to say Felicity Hardy, the Black Cat.
going off the board for that one.
Do you think I'm right for that one? I'll say Aunt May. She's
there. Sorry, it was not Aunt May. Yeah, it was actually Human Torch. Who was J. Jonah Jameson's secretary when Peter Parker started working at the Daily Bugle?
Man, you know, I know a lot of Spider-Man facts. And okay, I'm going to reveal something here. I used to collect some Spider-Man when I was younger. So, yep. You know,
we're all foolish.
I got some amazing, and so I'm up on my Spider-Man trivia. A little bit. Betty Brant, I think, was secretary.
You are correct, without having any of the multiple choices given to you. Who was Peter Parker's first superhuman girlfriend? White Tiger, Black Cat, Kitty Pryde, or Ms. Marvel?
Interesting. And I'm hoping none of it's retconned in, like the Kitty Pryde. Black Cat was in the 80s. Did it really take that long for him to have a superpowered girlfriend? Who was the first one?
White Tiger, Black Cat, Kitty Pryde, or Ms. Marvel? I think White Tiger wasn't. That was all like the street level Iron Fist and
Nova,
Luke Cage. Yeah. I think they all kind of connected this. White Tiger was one of those characters.
Black Cat, I guess. The only one I know.
Yes, it is.
Wow. It took him that long. Okay.
Yeah. She also dated Flash Thompson. What other superhero helped Spider-Man the first time he fought the Ringmaster in his circus of crime?
I'll say the Hulk.
Okay, well, he's not on the list, but we do have close, but not on the list. Human Torch, Hawkeye. Didn't the Hulk, though, wear a clown costume as part of, like, the first Avengers? Like, he dressed up in that. Okay, Human Torch, Hawkeye, Daredevil, or Iron Man? Circus of crime. But technically, according to PETA, all circuses are crime.
The Hulk. I'll say Human Torch.
Sorry, sir. It was Daredevil.
Oh. Yeah, that was my last guess. I mean, so... I wouldn't have gotten that anyway.
We're down to the last two in the top 20.
All right, we'll do two more.
Yep. The supervillain known as Mysterio started his career as what? A librarian, a stuntman, S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, or a magician? You are correct. Yes. Quentin Beck was a stuntman.
I wouldn't have been able to name his secret identity, but I knew he was a stuntman.
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal. What actor played Spider-Man in the 1977 TV series? We're going to go out on this one.
Wow. Why are we going out on that one?
Because you're going to get the multiple choice, and you should know who's who on this one.
All right.
Parker Stevenson. John Travolta,
nope.
Nicholas Hammond, or Sean Cassidy?
I'll say Nicholas Hammond.
Nicholas Hammond is correct. Yay! Parker Stevenson and Sean Cassidy were in the Hardy Boys together, and we all remember John Travolta was doing his Vinnie Barbarino in Welcome Back, Cutter. So,
right. That wasn't too bad.
Yeah, out of that batch of 10... You got two incorrect. So you were got 80 on that one.
Pulled it out on the second trimester.
Yeah. Yep. So your final exam, we'll top it all off to find out how well you did. How's that for our callback?
Great.
So you did actually know more about Spider-Man than you might have thought.
That's right. See, I have some brain cells left.
I'll let you end on this one. This is the penultimate final exam then. Why wouldn't the Comic Code Authority approve Amazing Spider-Man 96 through 98?
Peter was naked with candles.
They do actually have that as an option here. Almost. Sexual situations, violence, mention of drugs, or political content. Ooh, and this time
drugs. I think they were touchy back then.
Correct. Yeah. That was a big issue. In fact, if I remember right, Stan Lee got approached by some group. I can't remember the name of the group right off, but they were asking them to talk about the proliferation of drugs in school and trying to keep the... And so he did it for the government, but the American, whatever, the Comics Code Authority was like, nope, can't do it. They actually ran it without the Comics Code Authority way back when. You did well. That helped bring up your total GPA there, Andy, on that last one.
Oh, so that was you were Spider-Man trivia.
From usefultrivia.com, veritable warehouse of what they call useful trivia.
Sweet. So if you have any questions on Kraven, The Last Hunt, let us know. Matt 10.0, I'm sure he loved that series.
That's one of his tattoos.
Right, yeah. I don't even want to know where it is, but sure it is. If you
want to see The Last Hunt?
If you have any questions, email us at and this is why I love comics at gmail.com. We're on the Facebook, we're on the Twitter, we're on the Instagram. And check the Facebook group for current calendar events and what we may read next. Sorry about my sniffles.
It's a tear jerking series, you know. The end of Kraven. Very, yeah. Very emotional.
Sorry. I'm more of a fan of his now than I was when he was alive.
You don't know what you have until it's gone.
That's right. And this is why I love comics. I'm Andy.
And I'm Mike.
And we'll turn on the Thunder Chicken. Thanks for joining us. Tell a friend, and we'll see you next time.
Bring it, Thunder Chicken. We're going to hunt down that Thunder Chicken.
Hunt Thunder Chicken's last hunt.
Bawk.
Bawk.
The deep meaning. Every third panel is going to have a chicken somewhere in it. And it's going to have... It's like, oh, man. It's so... just pulling worms out of the ground. Oh, it's so deep. The symbolism.
Don't get away that easily, because to you everything comes easy. You think you know everything. You just know about yourself. And I hate that. And I hate that. But you never go away.
Much like the rest of my life, I'm just average.
Welcome to, that's why we live in the Midwest. We're right in the middle of just average. We're not really exceeding in anything. We're just exceedingly average.
Welcome to Mediocreville.
Population, us. Who's got two thumbs and a rather mediocre life? Oh, yeah.
This guy.
This guy. Spider-Man can do anything he can because a spider, whatever a spider can. I can't remember how the lyrics go for that stupid song.